Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can be happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host, Sandy Fowler. And today, we are going to be talking about bullying from a very different perspective. In one of our early shows, I think it was number 3, we addressed bullying. And this time, we're looking at it in a whole new way. We're talking about what causes a child to bully and how, as parents and community members, we can understand that behavior so that we can help resolve the situation and empower our own children.
Yeah, Judy, you know, it's really a complicated situation, and it's so emotionally charged no matter which end of the problem you find your family on. And that's why I so appreciate our guest's viewpoint. Her name is Dr. Charlotte Resnick, and she helps kids and teens to use the power of their imagination to cope with the stressors of the 21st century. She is a busy and generous lady. She's the author of the Los Angeles Times bestseller, The Power of Your Child's Imagination, How to Transform Stress and Anxiety into Joy and Success. Dr. Resnick is a child educational psychologist and a former UCLA associate clinical professor of psychology. She has so much information out there for us. She has a fabulous TED Talk, an amazing coping skills program. She runs a private practice, she blogs, and so much more. And today, she is joining us here on Mighty Parenting to help us get that new perspective on bullying so that we can have a really great impact. So Dr. Resnick, thank you for taking the time to be here with us today.
Oh, Sandy and Judy, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm glad to be speaking with you.
So, as Judy mentioned, we had talked on episode 3, we talked about bullying, but we were looking at the long-term emotional damage for kids who've been bullied. But most bullying conversations do that. They revolve around the child who's being bullied, or they look at disciplinary actions for making a bully stop. It's like, what can we do to just make this behavior stop? But we never look at why it's happening. And you help us do that. You have such a different take on it. So Dr. Resnick, could you maybe just start out by telling us a little bit about why kids actually do bully in the first place?
Well, what I find, you know, over all these years is that a bully type kid usually feels bad about themselves. And often to make themselves feel better, they want to pull somebody else down. So I explain this to kids both on both ends that I see. So say you're feeling pretty good. You know, if you keep your hands up in the air, you're feeling pretty good, you know, you yourself as a potential victim. But the bully is feeling really low, like way down on the scale. So if he attacks you and pulls you down to his level, he could feel better. He could feel, okay, he's not so bad in comparison. So and I think we have to be really compassionate because bullies, you know, get a bad rap in a sense. You know, I'm not for bullying or anything like that. It's just that I try to look beyond the actions and look at the root of it and what's causing it, because that is, to me, it's a more thorough way to address the situation. You see it in homes where older kids bully their younger siblings, or sometimes the younger ones are bullying the older ones. So it kind of happens all over. And I think it's wonderful that today, in today's day, we're paying more attention to it. Because I think when maybe we were growing up, it wasn't, you know, a hot topic. It was just, oh, that's how kids are. But the truth is, if we want to develop kids that are authentic, have integrity, have compassion, are empathetic, we do have to pay attention.
Well, I love what you said about the whole bullies are feeling bad about themselves. It's like sheds that light and immediately makes me go to this place of Are there certain signs that our kids, that we might see in our kids or their friends, that would be indicators that they're headed down that road of bullying? Are there things that we can see?
Well, it doesn't happen overnight. I think a bully kid is going to be gaining in his either inner anger, inner depression, seeing it at home. I think sometimes I come across parents in my office who are, of course, trying to do the best. They're always doing the best they can. And sometimes I find that one parent is more authoritarian and bottom line, and the other one is more compassionate. And so sometimes that bottom line gets into a power struggle. I don't want to say it's dads, you know, or moms. It could be either one. It just, people seem to go into roles at home. So in our society today in America, the kids don't seem to do well with that authoritarian parenting from early on. And sometimes when we have teenagers, it's like we feel so frustrated. We just say, you know, no, you don't ask me why, because I'm your father or your mother. And then the kids attack against that. And so sometimes when the kids get angry, they want revenge. They can't take it out on their parent or their sibling, maybe. So they take it out on someone else. But really see it as a spillover to what is going on internally. And they also feel power. If you start muscling in on someone and, you know, doing a little bit of bullying, like putting them down or teasing them in a hurtful way, and you get noticed from the other kids, either they look up to you because you appear very powerful or they're scared of you. That's the kind of attention that could kind of fuel more bullying anyway. So you see, it's very layered and it's a little bit complicated. It's not, maybe we can look at it like the spokes of a wheel. Inside that circle is that child that could be a potential bully. And then there are all these spokes that can contribute to them exploding into a bully. So I think when you're asking me specifically, can you notice certain things? I think you just have to notice your child. And if there are any changes in behavior, if they're not seeming empathetic, and talk to them and try to find out what's going on in their life. So you might even say, hey, it looks like you're pretty, you know, it seems like you're pretty upset or you're pretty angry. And it seems like one way is, you're pushing your brother, or I heard it from a friend's mom, you made him feel uncomfortable or her feel uncomfortable. And I want to know what's going on. You know, I love you, I'm your mom, I'm your dad. I'm not going to get mad, just be honest. And you have to start the conversation. And even if you haven't had a good kind of communication when they were little, and teens are notorious for like, because they have to separate anyway, but that's a time that they're notorious for not communicating with their parents, is what I wanted to finish saying. But their job is to also separate from parents, so there's a push-pull. But as a parent, that might be a time that they need you the most.
So I would just want to make sure that I'm getting what you're saying here as far as kind of keeping an eye on our kids. And if we see changes in the behavior, not for the good. Mm-hmm. If we see more frustration, lots of anger, not showing empathy, starting to push people around, even in smaller ways, that those are signs that there's something else going on. It's not just, oh, I need to nip this bullying in the bud. This isn't about going, you need to stop this behavior. What I heard you telling us is this is the indication to have the conversation to say, it seems that maybe there's something bothering you or something is wrong and I care about you. Can we talk about it?
Right. Exactly. And to not like name call, you know, like you're acting like a bully or you're being a bully, that might not necessarily help a child because that makes them feel bad, but more like you're concerned about them. Let's see what's behind this. Let me, you know, I'm here for you.
And that is the root of it. What you told us at the beginning is you said the root of bullying is because they don't feel good. They don't feel good about themselves. They have this anger. They have this frustration. One example that you gave is things could be going on in the home, this power struggle between the parents, authoritarian parenting. What other kinds of things are causing our kids so much hurt that they do lash out?
So a lot of it, especially in teen years, is coming from their peers, because peers are so important. You know, they're moving away from parents and their friendships are much more important. So that's why when we hear, let's take it to an extreme level, when we hear kids that shoot up schools, a lot of them have been described as quiet or depressed. And so when kids aren't fitting in socially with their peers, that we don't know what's going on inside internally. So we have to find out. And it's like keeping a very watchful eye, taking your distance so your child has, your teen has more freedom, but really keeping a watchful eye on, is he with friends? Is he or she having lunch with friends? Is he isolating in his room or her room? Really paying attention and not so hands-off in that respect. And then even speaking to other kids or their parents. So it could be going on at school. It could be teachers that a teacher is humiliating. I've heard this too many times, even though we love teachers. They have an impossible job. They don't get paid enough. But specifically, I've heard from kids that their teachers might, or parents, that their teachers might humiliate them in class. So anything that's going to hurt a child might cause not a sadness reaction, but an angry reaction, because anger is usually a covering up for something else like hurt, betrayal, disappointment. And so the kind of kid that becomes a bully is going to react with revenge rather than sadness and disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so it could be from parents' home, could be from siblings, could be from peers, could be from teachers, could be from any of those, could be from a coach that is trying to get the kids on the team to do really well, but it feels like bullying actually to the child, and then he can't react to the coach, but he can to other kids. It's kind of the kick the dog syndrome that, you know, in the old comic strips.
Yeah.
The dad gets yelled at work, so he yells at the mom yells at the kid kicks the dog. It goes down the line. It's really, to me, it's a whole system of raising kids that are emotionally and psychologically happy that starts from the time they're born, and it starts from parents working on themselves, and then it extends to how their peers are growing up, from their homes, from, you know, each other, teaching empathy. It starts from birth. And by the time they're teenagers, a lot is formed. And I certainly hear about bullying in younger years as well, but teenagers, because they usually have a very adapt speaking skills, can be very cruel, can bully with their words as well as their actions.
Yeah, there's so much there. And I want to turn this sideways for just a second, because we've talked a lot about the situation where, you know, maybe it's our child who is actually taking on a bullying behavior, which we want to recognize. We don't want to get scared and go, oh my gosh, I can't raise a bully. We want to go, wow, my kid is hurting in some way, and help that. So if we're in a situation where a child is being bullied or sees somebody else being bullied, as parents, like, what I'm trying to figure out is, how can we approach the problem with the school, with the other family, in a more compassionate and a more effective way? You know, recognizing that the child who is quote unquote causing the problem is in pain. What can we do about that when it's not our, you know, it's not our child? We can't say, hey, we're gonna get to the bottom of this for you, and we're gonna help you figure out what's hurting you, and we're gonna get you some new coping skills, or we're gonna get some of Dr. Resnick's, you know, products and help you work through this. What can we do when we're kind of the third party?
Okay, so you're not the parent of the child that's being bullied or the bully parent.
Oh, well, no, we could be the parent of the bully. Of the child being bullied.
Okay.
or but not the parent of the bully. You know, how do you approach that?
I think a good conversation, like if it's, you notice it from school, you speak to the headmaster or the principal, and you have a meeting, maybe even first with the parents, and then you bring the kids in and let them know that you're concerned because this is happening and you want to work together in a way that this doesn't happen anymore. So you're not saying the bully is a bad person, but you're saying this, you don't want this to happen anymore and you want to work together in a solution so that everyone has a say. Mm-hmm. So if you could have, I think that's it's a good first step. You don't want to not speak up and you don't want to like heavy handle it. You know, like, so if you know this, say you're friends with someone and you notice that that friend's child bullying another kid.
Mm-hmm.
You might speak to that parent and say, hey, I'm really concerned about your son. This is what I noticed. How can we work together to make everyone, you know, feel better and work out and treat each other kindly?
Well, and now we'll all have the advantage of being able to say, hey, I heard this interview about how to handle this when our kids are hurt and their hurt is coming out in inappropriate ways.
Yeah, I think the bullying is the tip of the iceberg. So when you see bullying behavior, that there's so much underneath that came to it. And that's really from any age. So it is a big, you know, whoa, what's going on here sign. Let's stop. Let's get some help. And, you know, see what resources are available. You have to be careful what you say to a parent because they'll get defensive. That's why you want to approach it like, I'm concerned for everyone. And I know that you love and you care about your child. This doesn't seem like him. That's not, you know. Like when I speak to kids in my office, who are bullies, I might say something like, this is not the kind-hearted kid I know. You know, what's going on? Let's bring that one out.
So now I want to step into the shoes of the parent that has a bully and go back to something you brought up a little bit ago. And that was you mentioned that power is the thing that can also be a driving force behind bullying. And Sandy and I talk a lot about coping skills and the importance of us as parents giving coping skills to our kids and teaching them through modeling and other things how to move through some of the challenges. So I'm a parent that has a child who's bullying, and mm-hmm. I would love for you to address what would be a way that I could empower my teen and provide some healthier strategies for them to get those feelings that you said, like power. They want to feel in power and in control. What can we do as parents to help them get those feelings in a healthy way?
That's, again, a very important aspect of this situation. So if you haven't been teaching your child meditation, breathing, mindfulness skills, this is the time to start. And some kids poo-poo, whatever, you know, like I was speaking to a teen and I said, have you done any meditation before? And she said, no, my mother does that. I would never do that. And I go, oh, it's okay. We'll just do some deep breathing then. Because what happens when our buttons are pushed in our brain, the amygdala, which is deep in our brain, lights up, and that's like the fight or flight reaction. So if someone makes fun of us, this is like if someone makes fun of the bully, say, he or she might get so upset, their amygdala lights up in their brain, and what happens is that their frontal lobe, where we do logical thinking, shuts down. So they can't think, and they just react like in a very primitive state. In order to help you think again, you have to calm that part of the brain down. And you do that through slow breathing. You can't, you know, in the moment when they're so mad that they want to bully someone else, it has to be very very basic, and they have to practice this a lot beforehand. So it's like, you know, without thinking, that they could calm themselves down. Also, it's better if they never get to that breaking point. It's kind of like an adult sometimes, when people drink too much, there's either happy drunks or angry drunks. You don't want an angry drunk because they can't think and they're going to hurt you. They might hurt you. Same thing with a person who's predisposed maybe to be, a bully type person. I didn't even mention the genetics, but there's also genetics involved in how we react and who we are. But in terms of what to do, you really want to teach your kids to count to 10. I mean, it's basic stuff. What we're talking about, mindfulness and meditation and yoga and all this, kids might say it's woo-woo stuff. Some adults might too, but it's not. We have to use our breath. Then we could use our thought to slow down and to think.
Well, what I liked is, yes, we all use the term woo-woo, and some of us use it with woo-woo stuff we love, and other people are like, I'm not doing that, it's woo-woo. But you already just told us this isn't woo-woo, this is science.
Exactly.
You shared the physiology of what's happening and why, counting to 10 and taking a few deep breaths actually changes your physiology so that you can re-engage your frontal lobe.
Yes.
And think and be you again.
Yes. And also do, as parents or as, teachers, or we could tell our kids stories. So they want to hear, it's really meaningful to them if, not the, like, I walk 10 miles to school story.
Uphill both
the
ways.
Right. But kind of like, this happened to me when I was a teen. Some of the kids ganged up on me and jumped me, and it made me so mad that I just wanted to fight everyone. Just something that might have happened to you that they could relate to, and the lesson you learned from it. Rather than teaching them the lesson right away, like, oh, never do this, if you give them a story from your own life or a story you know about from someone else that's close to them, they can relate to that more. And that makes a greater impact.
I find that it's funny with my kids, the stories about how I screwed it up, they are more open to learning from than the stories about where I was in the situation and actually got it right. It's kind of the sense of, well, mom screwed it up, I could do better than that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And she's human then. So,
And a lot of parents, I want to actually go there for a second, because a lot of times as parents, we somehow think that it's not okay to tell our kids that we screwed up or that we did something wrong. I'm not saying, when they're 5 years old, tell them every stupid thing you ever did when you were 20.
Right.
But to purposefully and with intent, as you said, share a specific story without telling them you need to do this, just literally sharing the story of it to go, I understand because I've been in a similar situation, so I understand. And by the way, I really screwed it up because I didn't take the time to take a deep breath and I got suspended from school or whatever happened.
And it even goes to one, it's interesting because when we share those stories or we model the behavior, I think back to when my kids were in high school, and I have always been into the woo-woo stuff in meditation. My kids used to make fun of me for all that I was doing at that time. But when I explain to them, I do it because it provides stress relief. It helps me with my anxiety. It does this. And now as adults, my kids will use the techniques I did. So it's almost like,
that's wonderful.
I just want to say, ha, awesome. See, I told you. But
yeah, you wouldn't do that.
By being honest, like what you're saying, Sandy and Dr. Resnick, by being honest about our life experiences, that's when those lessons hit home and help our kids get through some of these things. And what I'm hearing from this whole conversation is just, there is hope. Just because our kids are having an experience of bullying behavior, like they are lashing out that way, it doesn't mean it's forever. Is that correct, Dr. Resnick?
That's exactly. Start wherever you are now, wherever your child is now, wherever the child you're working is with now, just start now. And that goes for developing empathy, compassion, understanding, self-love, self-care, all of that. Just start now. Now is the best time.
And it also has struck me with what Judy just said in your response that it's, again, it's not just about stopping that behavior. So we don't wait until we see a negative behavior. We start talking and sharing stories and modeling these skills or learning these skills. Maybe we don't have the skills. I've invited my kids to learn different things alongside me. I just say, I have a problem here. I'm going to be working on this. You know, I'm going to start going to yoga because I need this. I need it physically. I need to work on my balance, but emotionally I need it for this and this. You know, I'm really stressed out or things have been tough, and I'll talk about what's going on, you know, in our family and invite them to come with me. And then also, you know, when, like you said, you know, if they laugh at you and go, no, I'm not going, also remind them of the science of it. Cause actually yoga is known to be the ultimate healing for many emotional and traumatic issues. But remind them of the science of it, as well as nicely, kindly pointing out that your life is very stressful and you do need to learn how to handle those things.
Yes. And I'm also thinking that it is important to have limits and boundaries. So you notice I didn't say it's okay to be a bully. It's just that it's important to understand what's behind it. And look, if you have a teenager, the greatest motivation is car keys. It's like, if you behave like this, you're showing me you're not responsible. I want to help you. I want to give you lots of freedom. I want you to have a car. But if you behave like this to another human, then it's telling me you're not responsible. So until, when you do show me, then you can have the car keys again.
And so the responsibility in this case would come into them working, not just changing the behavior, but that we would also be having that conversation and going, I understand this behavior is not you. It's coming from things that are happening. So being responsible is you working on those things, and I'm happy to help you do it, or if I don't know how, we will find somebody who does.
Yeah, exactly. And now mindfulness is very big in America. I think it caught on partly because the word mind is in it and the word meditation is not, but it is a form of meditation and is being aware what's happening within yourself without judgment. So it's kind of developing self-compassion, which is very important for everyone, our teens, our young adults. And just to remind parents who have teens, your job is never done. The 20s are a tumultuous time where kids are discovering themselves. Adolescence with the Pediatric Association is up to 26. So you still have a little work to do, but that's great because you have more time.
And that's a relief to know that we do still have time. We have one who graduated from college very recently, and I just had to keep reminding myself that she still didn't need to know everything there was to be an adult. Also, we don't get to know everything there is to know about this topic because we do need to wrap up. So I'm going to attempt to kind of go back and summarize.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I don't know how great this one's going to be because I have so many amazing notes. So go to the mightyparentingpodcast.com site and read at the end when I have time to actually type up the summary of it. You guys can do that. But essentially, our key points here are is that kids bully for a reason. And typically, it's because they're feeling bad about themselves. So they feel that they need to bring someone else down because that makes them feel better. And as they start doing small bullying things, they may also find that it gets them attention and power. So they may also start to feed off of that. And so what we can do as parents is, you know, if we see some of those signs, if we see changes in the behavior that we don't care for, we see lots of anger and frustration, we see that they're not showing empathy for people, we need to have the conversation. But it needs to come from a non-judgmental, I'm concerned about you place.
Yeah.
And that's when it's our kid and we can really, you know, we have more, I don't say control, because it's not that we have control over the kid, but we can say, hey, you know, let's get some help and whatnot. When it's someone else's child, we can still approach the situation with empathy. We just need to have empathy also for the other child's parents and for the school. And so what you suggested to us, Dr. Resnick, was to go into that and say, you know, I'm concerned for everyone because we have a situation going on here. I'd like us to all work together to make sure that, you know, because we don't want this to happen anymore. We want everyone to be happy and emotionally healthy and in a safe space. And that also opens us up to, we can't get into a big discussion, but sometimes our kid could be doing something to incite the bully as well. You know, they might not be as innocent as we think sometimes. So we need to be open to that.
Yeah.
And then lastly, that we as parents need to help our kids learn skills for managing emotion and for processing the difficulties of life. And we could do that through modeling and teaching. And we need to do things like meditation, breathing, and mindfulness, which are actually science-based, not just woo-woo. So if you don't do woo-woo, learn about it with your kid. And if you've done it, invite them to come in. And if they are, you know, if they are the little science geek or they're turning their nose up at it, bring up the science aspect of that. And as Judy said, whatever is going on, what we found out today is this is not forever and there is definitely hope.
Yes. It doesn't have to be forever.
Now, Dr. Resnick, I know you have amazing tools, and I had the privilege of interviewing me on the other podcast I've done, which people have heard about a number of times. And we didn't get to go into actual techniques today. So for people who are going, well, you know, I'd like to learn some techniques. I'd like to find out what is this imagery that she uses. Where can they find you?
Website, www.imageryforkids.com. That's F-O-R. And lots of information up there, as you know, TED Talk, book, CDs, all of the above and more. Radio interviews. I mean, lots. But the point is, I want these parents to get some support. I'm happy to help. And whether I could do it or someone else, it's important to stop the bullying by starting to get understanding, compassion, and help for the kids.
That's amazing. And I have learned so much today, and I know our listeners are just going to eat it up. But we are about ready to dig into Real Talk, and we are going to be discussing how to get on the same page with the rest of your family so that you can actually have an awesome summer. And we're going to do that right after this quick message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
Welcome back, and it is time for Real Talk. I am kind of excited about today's topic, actually. I'm not really sure how we're going to get into it and what's going to unfold, because we're talking about having conversations. And I know that you mentioned in the interview we just did that your kid just graduated college and, you know, prom is coming. And we talked about that on the previous episode of Real Talk. But All of those things mean that summer is on the way, and you as a parent might be dreaming of beach days and picnics and, you know, lounging by the campfire and talking to your kids while your teen or your college student that's home for the summer is, you know, dreaming school's out for summer and they want to sleep in till noon and hang out with their friends. So how we can get on the same page so that our summer is not full of arguments and disappointment and lost expectations, I believe it all starts with a conversation up front, because we definitely don't want to be in a conversation in the heat of the moment. We all know how that goes when we're talking with our teens. So I know, Sandy, you have some specific things that you wanted to share about some things to cover in that conversation. So I guess the big topic is we need to talk about what's going to happen over the summer, but how do we do it so it's effective and everyone has the summer that they are looking forward to?
Yeah, it was, you hit on a point there, Judy, is that it's that expectation piece that bites us in the butt, because we think one thing's going to happen, and when, and some, and our kids think something too, and nobody's right or wrong, but when they don't mesh, and you start clashing, and everybody gets upset and they get angry, and depending how bad it is, you know, Dr. Resnick just talked about how our amygdala gets all lit up, and then we're not even rational about it. So,
and we get defensive.
Yes. Oh yes. We won't even. And you don't love me and you don't want to spend time with me and all the drama, or you, or in the reverse side, right? You're trying to monopolize all my time. I want to see my friends. I want to see my boyfriend, my girlfriend, whatever.
Which is exactly what they should be doing right now. I mean, in some ways that's their, in the developmental stage, that's the healthy behavior for them to want to get away from you.
Yes.
And.
Doesn't mean they get to. Yes. And I love your ands, Jude. So, and yes, we do need to let them spend time away from us. We also need to maintain our relationships and our time with them. So I know we have learned that the best way to avoid problems is to have conversations up front. You know, you mentioned my daughter graduating, and when we picked her up from college, I warned her. I said, you get a week of vacation. And then you and Dad and I need to sit down and talk about thoughts, ideas, expectations. I said, and it's not just what we want. We want to know, what do you want? What do you need from us? What is your plan? And just to get a handle on that. And so summer is the same thing. No matter what your kids' ages are, from 2 to 102, we can all have thoughts about what we want to do. And so I generally see these conversations as having three parts to them. The first is just asking everybody, what is it that you were thinking of? What is it that you want? What is it that would be fun for you? What do you need to accomplish? You know, we're talking about lots of fun stuff. Some kids are going, I need to work. I need some money. I have, you know, I've got bills coming up. I've had kids freaking out going, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to adult in, you know, whether it's 6 years or 2 years or 2 months. So they're all different things that they could be looking at. So the first thing is just asking.
Right. And you want specifics, right? Is that what I'm hearing you saying? It's, you don't want them just to go, I want to have fun this summer.
Great. What is fun for you?
Right. Okay. So that first step is ask what they want and what they have planned, and find and dig out the specifics.
Yeah. So what really helps is if you, as you're having the conversation, you can keep going, that's great, and tell me more, or that's great, what does that mean to you? What does that look like to you? Until you actually come out with something that if you wanted to, you could write it down on a calendar. There and you could say, on these days, we're doing this. Not that you have to do that. That's just what you're aiming for, is something that concrete.
Yes. Okay. Perfect.
So that's the first thing is, you know, everybody gets to lay out what their expectations are, what they want. Then secondly, everybody gets to share their thoughts in a respectful way. So if the kid says, I want to spend all summer sitting on the beach with whoever. And it's especially if it's not you. And even if it's you, you can say, I totally get that. Boy, that sounds great to me. Or, you know, I can't stand the beach, but I'd totally love to be, you know, curled up in my hammock with a, you know, cold lemonade and my best book. And we have other things that we also need to do. And so spread out that conversation to get them to start thinking past themselves to other people, get them thinking past the summer to their future, if you need to, you know, if those are things that that you need them to think beyond. Some kids will lay out so much that you'll want to pass out thinking about what they want to do. And then that's the conversation too, is, honey, I so love that you want to do this, but, you know, son, we want to enjoy our summer. And you've just laid out the work of 10 people. And I'm not willing to do that. So let's figure out what we're willing to do. And that's the third piece. The third piece is actually come to an agreement. Are you taking a family vacation? When is it? When do they have to be packed? What are their responsibilities? What are your responsibilities? You know, who's going to do what? Who's working? How are people getting to work? Go through those logistics. And no, that part may not be a lot of fun, but I will tell you what it does do is it takes off the pressure of going through those logistics day to day to day to day to day and having to do it 1,000 times over the summer and having things pop up and bite you in the butt, like finding out that, wow, we have 4 people working in 3 cars. And mm-hmm. So not everybody can get to work or whatever those situations may be.
Right. And I just want to go back, you know, you mentioned in step 2, how important it is to help the kids see beyond themselves mm-hmm. and see how their behaviors and their expectations and wants have an impact on the family. And I would flip it also for us parents to take that advice in ourselves, because it's really easy, especially in when our kids are, let's say they graduated high school, you know, you've got a senior that's getting ready to go off on their own in the fall, or they're coming home for school. It's hard for parents often to make that transition to think past themselves and their rules and look at their child as an adult. You know, Dr. Resnick said we have to teach and parent until, you know, they're well past 26. But that teaching and parenting changes, and you mentioned respect. And I just want to like really hone in on that, because the best way to nurture relationship with your child as they get into those adult years is to respect where they're different than we are.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do that, and allow that to be part of their world, then you pretty much have set the groundwork for them to have life outside of you. I see it happen all the time. So I just wanted to put those, you know, those 3 steps are brilliant, Sandy. And I just want to add those couple caveats
yep.
as parents put them into play. So is there anything else you want to say as we wrap up of how to have this get on the same page for summer?
No, I think that's it. That's the core. Have a respectful conversation that lays out the details of what people want, and just so everybody knows what's expected of them. And that will save everybody a lot of pain, and it brings in a lot more joy and a lot more fun.
Absolutely. So I just want to say thank you to all of our listeners, whether you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher or from our website, mightyparenting.com, or you have actually tuned in from our YouTube channel, which is found at mightyparentingtv.com. If you like what you heard today, be sure to like, subscribe, and share, because that's how we find other parents like you who are raising their teens and parenting their 20-somethings and need a little support. Because here at Mighty Parenting, we are so much more than just a podcast. We are actually a community supporting one another to do and dig into those parenting challenges that we face day in and day out, so that you can have that family life and relationship with your teen and young adult that you want. So just visit us over at mightyparenting.com and choose what you need, and we can help you. And until next time, this is Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler helping you become a mighty parent.